Maybe as you heard today's scriptures, your heart sank and you thought, what a downer. I thought that I spent all of this past week in that same auditorium where Salman Rushdie was attacked. And so I really wanted to hear something cheerful to take me to a different place. But I think my task is to bring you around and to bring myself around to see how we can use these scriptures to do as Jesus says, to interpret the present time. I want to acknowledge that there is a pushback factor to Sunday readings, which is unavoidable. First of all, because we follow a schedule of readings that covers the whole Bible in 3 years. And we share this schedule of readings with many church denominations to express our common ground over against our long history of being divided churches in a divided world. So we stick to the schedule to express our desired unity of spirit. We don't skip the readings. Secondly, the Bible says some hard things and they have to come up at some point. Actually, the Bible defies our efforts to turn it into Hallmark moments filmed in Almont, Ontario with always a happy ending. Even when we have the freedom to choose the readings, such as at a funeral or a wedding, it's hard to make the Bible say all the nice things that we want it to say. For example, this is the favorite reading. Even when Jesus encourages us not to worry by considering the lilies of the field that have enough soil and the birds of the air that have enough food, which God provides, and it's all very wonderful, Jesus immediately goes on to tell us about the farmer who decided to invest in bigger barns to hold his fantastic harvest, and then he died that very night of the harvest. As C.S. Lewis says about Aslan the lion in Narnia, that standing character for God, God is wild and not really tameable, so we should expect wildness in the Bible. But this is no bad thing. There are hard things in life, and they are too easily the cracks that get papered over to create a false tranquility. We go looking in the Bible for comfort and reassurance, and we will find it there. But the Bible does not isolate itself from the complexities of life as it was. And neither should we. So Jesus says, I came to divide families. I came to bring division and conflict. And he goes into detail about just who's going to fight with who. Then Jeremiah says that God's words are like fire, and they are like the hammer that breaks rocks into pieces. And woe to the prophet who has a dream that's really about himself or herself. The psalmist added that all you children are going to die, and it sounded better because it was sung. The author of the letter to the Hebrews tells how faithful people got tortured, mocked, flogged, imprisoned, stoned to death, killed by the sword, or sawn in two. But we're not going to choose nicer readings so we can talk about nicer things. Instead, we're going to wrestle with this. And I want to begin from who Jesus was and who Jesus is. It would be easy to picture Jesus as a nice, gentle nature boy. After all, it said he was born in a stable. He grew up around carpentry because that's what his father did. He told stories about planting seeds and harvesting grain, picking grapes in the vineyard, looking after sheep with lambs, and talking about lilies and birds. stick with just that, and yes, you have Nature Boy, but that's a very selective reading. When we look closer, we see that Jesus is doing something that is very rhetorical and very Jewish. And I want to address both of those parts, the Jewish part and the rhetorical part. The Jewish part is this: to be provocative in a way that encourages debate. The rabbis have done this through the centuries, and rabbis to this day, when they preach, read what different rabbis have said about the text through time. And it's almost like it's an argument that goes from one to another, back and forth through history, with the last one picking up from where the one previous left off. There's even a format for disputation, where two people will sit down together and each deliberately take the opposite point of view, even if in their heart of hearts they would actually agree. And they play what we might call devil's advocate, all in the journey of getting to a deeper truth. I've heard the sermon in the synagogue described as taking the seemingly irrelevant, or even the seemingly offensive, and finding in it the essential, what we might call the pearl of great price. So the key text for our task on Sunday is not the lilies of the field and the birds of the air. It's Jacob wrestling with the angel of the Lord. If you remember that story, they struggled all night, and in the end, Jacob was changed. He had a limp from his effort, but he also had a new name. He was no longer Jacob, which means the usurper, but he was blessed and renamed Israel, which means the one who wrestles with God. We should not be afraid of difficult texts, because the act of struggling with them is in itself an act of worship. The process of struggling with meaning is worship. If in the future there were, let's say, no religious buildings, we would still have wrestling with God as our worship. Let me quickly add that in order to do that together, we would need a place to meet, so we are not done with our care for buildings. That's its own kind of struggle, and it's also important. But we need to move to understand the struggle with the text as an act of worship. It's central to Jesus as a Jew. And that brings me to the second part, which is how Jesus uses rhetoric. Arguing with the text is a fine art, and the particular device Jesus is using is called hyperbole. Hyperbole is deliberate exaggeration to reveal what's at stake. I don't think Jesus wants our families to fight. But if you live in a time of terror and injustice and say there is no conflict, it's probably because you're papering over it with niceties, civility, properness, and politeness. Avoiding conflict perpetuates injustice. The injustice of Jesus' time was this: the Romans were the occupying power, and some people got rich by collaborating with it. Even the temple authorities were in the pay of the empire. The tax collectors got their collecting contract and inflated the tax amount so they could live well off the excess. And consequently, the land became more and more concentrated in the hands of the few. John Steinbeck did a parallel of this in his famous novel, The Grapes of Wrath. The small farmers could no longer make it work on their tiny plots of land, and they were bought out by huge, wealthy holdings. Families fled with nothing, starving and looking for work. And the ultimate betrayal was that family member who went back to be employed by the wealthy new landowners to drive tractor, to plow under all their old gardens and fields. I guess he had a choice, but what kind of choice was that? To get paid minimum wage to drive a tractor, or to betray your starving family, or to join them and starve with them? It's a terrible choice. Jesus is saying, tear down the paper of niceties that is papered over the injustices of his time. And that goes for our time too. Think of the stuff that we don't talk about. It used to be that if you were going to someone's house for a meal, you didn't talk about... you know. Religion, politics, and sex. More than one generation has lived by that rule. But when difficult subjects are banished, people actually don't know how to talk about them. There are now workshops on how to talk about difficult subjects. You can pay facilitators to show you how to talk about difficult subjects. And if you don't practice doing it, you're going to do it badly. And that's where that conflict will come in between family members. I have a story about a friend. I'll call her Penny to protect her confidentiality. She is Jamaican background, mixed black and white ancestry, but she appears white. And her sister appears black. Penny identifies herself as black because of her ancestry, but she says that she has been in settings where people say the most horrible things in front of her, and that they would not say those things if they recognized her as black, and they shouldn't be thinking them at all. Another example is people who are lesbian and gay and bisexual and transgender and two-spirited will often use the phrase, "Don't talk about us without us." These are examples of people talking about difficult things badly. We have to get better at talking about difficult things. I think Jesus is saying it's a false peace if we don't. Jesus would rather the difficult things get addressed even if there is conflict. Because difficult things are actually about life and death. And Jesus is on the side of life for all. When Jesus says he's come to set fire to the earth, he is saying, stop the false peace because it's killing people. He's exaggerating to make a case for getting the truth out in the open. So if we ask ourselves today, what are the things we find difficult to talk about? And who is hurting from our silence? We start to see that it's costly to avert our eyes. If we don't move in the direction of equipping ourselves, there will be conflict that explodes out from under all those papered over cracks. So here are a few examples. Ottawa Pride Week will be here in hardly any time at all. St. John's has been a forerunner among churches in welcoming gays and lesbians. But the needs are more complex than just gay and lesbian. More and more young people are identifying as transgendered. It's in the news a lot. Let's learn and understand what this is so that we can support those who identify as trans and support their families, and so that we can be that safe space for people who are confused and hurting. That's what we're going to do on August the 28th. And a couple more examples. There are more homeless people camping out overnight in our city than ever. In fact, right here on our church yard along the side, and maybe you walked past them to come in. and there are people shooting up in public, and it's just happening. It's actually happening everywhere, but it's especially challenging for downtown urban churches. And St. John's is more than that. St. John's is more than a downtown urban church. We're the music church, we're the justice church, we're the church that brings people from across the city. But we are also the downtown urban church, which is the Anglican presence for Centertown. Without denying or minimizing all the other things that St. John's is, we need to lean into our identity as an urban church. We can have ugly conflict if we don't talk about things well, but that will only happen if we choose not to talk about it at all. I think Jesus would want us to interpret the present time and our place in it, to talk about the now. And that kind of wrestling is an act of worship, and a necessary one. I want to conclude by pointing out that not everything in today's texts is doom and gloom. One of my favorite images in the Bible is in today's reading from the letter to the Hebrews. Let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us. Now, if you've ever run in a marathon or walked a pilgrimage, you know the importance of breaks and water stations. The struggles for truth in our time are like a marathon. They are complex problems with no easy solution, and they won't be solved overnight. They're like a marathon. So we need water stations. We need to get our bearings, catch our breath, rehydrate, and get nourished to keep going. That's this, the Sunday act of worship. The stopping to wrestle with what God would ask of us. Talking about difficult things is worship. And this is the water station. So let's drink in praise, beauty, the intimacy of communion, the joy of fellowship which we see when we meet each other eye to eye. This will nourish us on the shared journey of facing our difficult things. This will sustain us towards a vision of the world on fire with goodness. Amen.